Good morning and thank you all very much for having me here today. I've been asked to talk about the role of corporate culture as a factor in building a sustainable business, and hearing Tony and Christine speak, both from very different industries from my own, I represent IAG Australia, and we are an insurance player, which I'll talk about shortly. We're all grappling with exactly the same issues around sustainability. And while IAG has a significant focus on environmental sustainability, I'd actually like to broaden my focus this morning to talk about business sustainability generally, in particular culture as being a key part in businesses' ability to compete, as well as the value of culture in enabling our own employees and getting internal buy-in around our corporate social sustainability initiatives. Before I begin, I'll provide a bit of context for our own organisation, but I'll just hark quickly back to George Littlewood's comments earlier this morning about how long this concept has been around. My own company actually was originally a mutual. I won't drag you through all of the history, but mutuals basically really are built around the community, and insurance is actually a concept that was built around sharing and spreading risk in the community. So while IAG today, sorry, I'm looking at the wrong person there, it's me now, I think, yep. IAG today is an international general insurance group, and we operate in Australia, New Zealand, Asia and Europe, primarily in the UK. We actually did start as a New South Wales mutual insurer. We now underwrite more than $7.5 billion of insurance premiums each year. We insure more than $900 billion worth of property. And as Alex mentioned, we employ around 16,000 people. So for a continually growing and expanding organisation like ours, sustainability is not a bolt-on. It's a prerequisite, as we see it, for competitiveness. It's really about our ability to survive and compete long-term in business, both as a profit-making entity and also so as a participant in the community. So when we look at sustainability, we look at a range of factors. There's operational sustainability, which is actually our ability to continue to do business, and this is heavily dependent on our people and their willingness to buy in. And the challenge this creates for us is really around creating a meaningful emotional connection with our people. And we heard some of the great things that news are doing from Tony in that space earlier. There's social responsibility, sustainability, which means helping us to sustain the community which sustains us. And obviously the community represents our customers. There's environmental sustainability and climate change. And you only need to look at the cost and social impact of severe weather events to understand why an insurance company is so interested in climate change. And IAG has been very interested in climate change for a number of years now, as many of you are aware. And finally, there's financial sustainability, which is obviously absolutely fundamental. Where, like my two colleagues, we represent a public company, so the return on capital that we return is vital for our long-term sustainability. But I'll just start now just talking a little about engagement and our people. While all of the other factors are essential for our long-term competitiveness, they're all enabled by one crucial asset, and that is our engaged workforce. And our culture really encourages and rewards the performance across all aspects of the balanced scorecard: social, operational, environmental and financial. And our people are the ones who actually keep the wheels turning here. They are the ones who are interacting with our customers and actually making our reputation. And our people ultimately represent our social programs. They're the ones who drive forward our climate change position and the adaptation activity that we have associated with that. And this is actually driven by their hearts and minds. So we can't write a corporate policy about this. This really comes from within. So in creating a culture, which in turn creates the level of engagement which allows all of this to happen, this, to me, is actually a core business function. But I think we need to understand probably what I mean when I talk about engagement here. I actually think of it as, in an employee context, as the emotional investment that our employees have with their employer. And I know it sounds a bit funny to be talking about emotional connections, but you can't have an engaged workforce without that emotional connection. And you don't. We all talk about discretionary effort and the extra, the 110%, and what fantastic people they are, the ones who put in the 110%. That only comes with an engaged workforce. And I think the question that was asked this morning about how companies will fare when recruiting if they don't have a strong and genuine focus on sustainability is one that I would contend, unless you do have that focus, you will not fare well. The link between engagement and sustainability isn't a one-way street. there's significant evidence, anecdotal and otherwise, to show that companies that do have a strong focus on sustainability attract and retain quality workers. Last year, Towers Perrin actually released its global workforce study, which polled 90,000 workers in 18 countries. Australia actually wasn't one of the countries, but I still believe the results are quite instructive. And the study also analysed the financial results of 40 global companies against their engagement data. Now, this study found that an organisation's reputation for social responsibility, so for the things we've seen my colleagues put up this morning, was actually one of the top 10 drivers of retention and engagement. And I suspect when we get to question time, I'll be interested. I'm quite sure that you've seen that come through in your own retention rates. We actually found that same finding came through in our own employee survey. In our employee survey, we had 80% of our employees, and we have 16,000 employees, saying that they valued IAG's focus on sustainability. And they see it as real. They live it. And I'll give you some examples of that shortly. So at the moment, we're all in a race for talent, and that's only going to intensify with each passing year. So, again, I see engagement as a critical success factor. Particularly when we're seeking specialised talent which will service our industry. So as well as boosting retention, engagement also improves business results. So there's a cyclical link here which makes engagement powerful. Engaged people deliver better customer service, and I'll show you some evidence of that shortly, which leads to happier customers, which obviously leads to growth in market share. I actually have two really lovely examples from opposite sides of the world in our business, which demonstrates an innovative and customer-centric approach by a couple of our employees. The first one was actually from our UK business, where one of our relatively young female employees was a survivor of breast cancer, and she was amazed that she couldn't get travel insurance because of her illness. Now, we're actually an insurance company, so her response to that was actually to develop a travel insurance product that we then turned into a commercial product which we actually sell and which makes travel affordable to breast cancer sufferers as well as the broader community. Now, that's been a very, very successful product for us in a commercial sense. It's also had a huge impact in terms of our employees recognising this is an innovation by a particular employee. And, in fact, they're now developing a product which is Insure Blue for sufferers of prostate cancer. There's also been recognition in the UK industry too about the value of this. In New South Wales, in the town of Muswellbrook, one of the members of our branch staff was very alarmed when her daughter got off at the bus at the wrong stop and was stranded for hours. So her response, once she dealt with the immediate problem, was to actually develop an NRMA insurance bus safety program, which now educates hundreds of school children in regional New South Wales on the importance of bus safety. Now, these are two really simple examples of initiatives that are generated at grassroots level. But again, I think to pick up the point I think that Ron made earlier, they are really inspiring innovations at the individual level, and those innovations need to be encouraged by the culture. And so I believe that our employees do feel that we have a culture where we do encourage that. These are pointers, as I've mentioned, to an engaged workforce. So the Towers Perrin study I referred to actually found companies with the highest percentage of engaged employees actually saw a collective increase of 19% in their operating income and 28% in their earnings per share year on year. By contrast, those companies with the lowest engagement scores showed year on year declines of 33% in operating income and 11% in earnings per share. Again, from the Towers Perrin survey, you can see that around half of those who are engaged want to stay where they are, while only 15% of those who are disengaged want to stay where they are. So in addition to understanding engagement, there are clearly cost advantages to get this right. So I think, as Christine said, it really is, it's a business issue. It is a core business issue. So high engagement doesn't guarantee outperformance week in, week out. It's one of a number of attributes of a successful business. We actually measure engagement in our business, as many of you do. I know I've seen the guest list, and many of the companies here do this as well. We have engagement scores of 61% in our Australian businesses, and we're in the Hewitt Best Employer Zone. Internally, we have an engagement survey which is called Your Voice, which is completed once a year by all of our employees. It's absolutely confidential to our employees. We get some really great feedback in the verbatims to that survey, and it's a very important communication channel to us. because it ensures that we actually get feedback from our people. But the crunch comes when we actually do something about it, because if you get the feedback and you don't act on it, then employees are the first to sort of really look right through the process. Now, IAG has been doing this for a number of years now, and it really has become a part of, the way we manage our business. We do have other feedback channels. We have a mailbox, which allows our people direct access to the CEO, and we have, obviously, roadshows throughout the years. And we're training our managers constantly to have very real conversations with their teams. One of the pieces of feedback that we actually received and acted upon was around flexibility. And flexibility isn't only something that Generation Y want. We're all seeing it in Generation Y, but flexibility is something that's been desired by people in the workplace again for some years. It can be very challenging to make flexible work arrangements fit with a busy business unit. And this is where culture, again, is really important, because managers actually have to know that they're not only allowed to do it, but they're encouraged to incorporate flexible work arrangements into their teams. So creating this culture means ingraining an appreciation of the benefits into the business. And it requires recognition that flexibility is not just an entitlement, it is actually sensible business. So we've actually found that our flexible work practices, again, go to the heart of costs, because you get a reduction in staff turnover and absenteeism when you build flexibility into the workplace. We've also seen other benefits of flexibility recognised externally, which is actually positive for our employees as well. For the fourth year running, we've just recently been named an employer of choice for women by the Equal Opportunity for Women in the Workplace Agency. And this, again, has a great internal resonance with our staff in terms of seeing that as valued. Another important sustainability initiative, again, which we got early feeds on from our engagement survey, is around phased retirement. These plans allow those who are about to retire to ease out of the workforce. They actually continue in sort of a mentoring role with younger workers, and we get that skills transfer, which, as we all know, is so very valuable, particularly in insurance, where there are some pretty core competencies that aren't generally available. Flexibility has really become a fundamental part of our employee value proposition. So flexible work hours, compressed working weeks, and job sharing are all things that people at IAG expect to see. So again, to remain sustainable and competing for talent, we have to continue to offer our people the benefits that they want. So the benefits we're giving them now might not necessarily be the benefits that people are looking for in 3 and 5 years' time. This is where I think really listening to your employee feedback surveys and then acting on it gives you both a quick win as well as a sustainable benefit. Now, I should, because many of you follow the financial press, despite our good engagement scores, we've been going through a very challenging patch when it comes to financial performance. And I guess part of this links into the subject of climate change. Our storm costs for the last half of 2007 were $200 million higher than for the last half of 2006. And many people, unless you're in the insurance business, you don't actually think about the broader numbers when you have that hailstorm. When there's a hailstorm warning in our building, the whole building starts to shake. Remember the first week I arrived at IAG, and I was just moving floors at about 4 o'clock to go to a meeting, and there were all these people in the lift, and they were rushing home to put their cars in the garage because the meteorologist report on the desk saying there's going to be a hailstorm in Sydney an hour and a half later. So it's really in the culture. People are watching the climate. But the response of our people to recent weather really illustrates the value of engagement through these tough times. And I'm actually going to just quickly show you what some of our people had to say after the June storms in the Hunter region of New South Wales. So I'm just going to quickly show a very, very short video clip. Now, this is not scripted. This was discussions with our staff after these storms. So we haven't shown it outside the company. And it actually starts with our head of claims, David Brown, and the man at the back told me when I clicked that he'd start talking.
I've used two words more in the last month than I ever have in my life, and that is humbling and inspiring, and both of them are attached to our staff. I got there on the Sunday morning, I walked into Newcastle CAC and I saw the people that were absolutely flat out, but every single one of them had a smile on their face.
The first day, about 6:30 on the Saturday morning, staff started arriving at work without being asked, which was just phenomenal. Overwhelming support, wanting to come in and help our customers. And most of those people had actually suffered damage themselves. So as they were coming into work saying, I've left my car somewhere last night, I don't know where it is, or there's water through my house, and So, I can't sleep, I need to get the furniture removed, those sorts of things. So to see the staff actually still respond to our own customers when they're in situations like that themselves, I thought was phenomenal.
Once the adrenaline starts to go, you do things you're very surprised at, and you'll throw your hand at anything just to help out.
Our call centre people and our claims people, we're operating around the clock. And obviously when people are ringing, they all want to tell their story, and there's a lot of emotion attached to claims of this nature when you have generally lost most of your contents items, and they do have the sentimental value. And also means that our staff spend a long time with our customers actually talking to them, and something that they do extremely well.
It was urgent because people were, I could hear the dramas going on about the fact that the queues were 100 people waiting.
I do remember being out at our help van with one of our staff, Debbie Kruger. A lovely elderly couple came in, and very hard of hearing, and she sat with them and helped them through, made them a cup of coffee. And as they were leaving, with tears in their eyes, she threw her arms around them, did give both of them a hug and a kiss, and said it'll be okay. Later on that afternoon, the lady actually brought Debbie back a pot of soup to actually receive that back from the lady who'd lost basically everything in her home, but still had the nature and the generosity to go and actually make some food for them. I thought it was fantastic. One of our staff's husbands rocked up on the Sunday and said, I'd really love to help, is there anything I can do? He was very proud of RMA Insurance, very proud of what his wife was doing, and really wanted to get in there and give us a hand as well. So we gave him a job to do. It was all hands on deck.
It feels personal. You deal with everyone, and obviously it's a very emotional time for people. Yesterday, a lady, two pushbikes washed away, and she recovered them, and I'm looking at them thinking, oh, they're not worth a lot of money. And I said, oh, what do you want to do with the bikes? And she said, oh, I want the fix. And I looked at him and thought, why? And she said, oh, that was my son's who passed away. And I said, oh, okay. So I've got the bikes picked up, taken away, getting a full service on the bikes for it. I'll never be ridden, but it's a sentimental thing.
I knew in my own mind then that this was something way out of the ordinary.
On Saturday, got to a ridiculous stage, about 120 on queue or something like that. But the thing is, we all work together.
Because you knew if you got off, somebody else was going to be waiting a little bit longer.
Thank you for holding. Your call is important. Please stay on the line and you'll be called by the next available operator.
First thing, reassure them that, yeah, we can rebuild homes, we can replace cars, furniture and everything like that, just as long as they're okay.
It makes you realise that a company like RMA, providing that type of service, is just... It's almost a moral thing, and it makes me actually proud to work for the company.
So you really can't buy that sort of advertising. I mean, that's as I say, unscripted from the people that are really working with our customers. And as you see, these people, they are our culture, and they really believe in what they're doing. And as you see from this particular case, very emotionally attached to the communities they work in and to our customers. So we get a lot of very emotional stories whenever there is a major event or even a minor event. And obviously that provides a real rallying point for a lot of our employees, because selling insurance is quite often a grudge product. And our people are really proud when there's a claim that we're actually there to help our customers. However, we do need a more consistent and less destructive rallying point than servicing when there's been major storms or other events. So something that can resonate across all of our businesses, and that is our purpose. So our purpose is fourfold, is to pay claims, price risk, reduce risk in the community and manage costs. And against the delivery of this as our values, our core values of integrity, transparency, teamwork, meritocracy and social responsibility. And this purpose and values applies in all the geographies that we operate in. So for us to be sustainable, everything that we do, both core and non-core, needs to link back to our purpose and be carried out in accordance with these values. Social sustainability is another element that I'll just quickly touch on. Once again, there's a clear link here with our purpose of paying claims and managing costs and reducing risks. In Australia and New Zealand alone, we insure 1 in 3 homes, 1 in 2 farms and 1 in 6 businesses. So our people are actually always active and visible in the community. So we're quite proactive in things like crime prevention, for example. So our employees will get involved in 3 ways. Firstly, by helping people to actually harden their homes and cars against theft by providing advice. Second, they support work in community programs that are sort of geared towards youths at risk of engaging in criminal activity. And finally, we use the data we have with the crime prevention authorities and other organisations in the community to reduce crime. So I've given you a touch of what we're doing around operating sustainability and social sustainability. I just want to quickly address environmental sustainability, because many people wonder why an insurance company is interested in climate change. Many of you will be aware that yesterday we were a part of a group, the Australian Climate Change Group, who called on the government to stabilise greenhouse gas emissions by 2010. And the reason we're interested is pretty simple. This slide in front of you actually shows 19 of the top 20 most expensive insurable events which have occurred in Australia since 1974 have been weather-related. Now, the only exception to that is the Newcastle earthquake. And the tallest bar on my left-hand side of the screen is actually the Sydney hailstorms of 1999. So it's well established that climate change affects the frequency of severe weather events, and you only have to look at the costs associated with severe weather from Cyclone Larry to the July storms in the Hunter region of New South Wales, which is about the fourth bar across, to the hailstorms in Sydney last December, to understand the impact of events like this on insurance claim costs. The Sydney storms of December 9 last year are estimated to have the cost to the industry of nearly $400 million, so they will also have a place on this chart about halfway along. So we've got a fundamental business interest in climate change and in creating a culture where addressing climate change and weather risks must be a priority. Internally, we make sure we provide our people with a range of options to reduce their individual carbon footprint. These include providing our people with energy-saving products they can use in their own home and climate help, which helps them offset their car emissions. Our people actually translate initiatives such as climate help to our customers. They're also responsible for some of the most innovative programs we have. We have something called the Risk Radar, which helps small business managers manage their OH&S and environmental responsibilities, and a hail gun, which is essentially a gun which shoots hail at tiles to determine what sort of tiles can withstand hail damage. Now, these initiatives, again, were initiatives of our staff, not edicts of the senior management team. From a group perspective, we have a goal of becoming carbon neutral by 2012, and clearly this goal would be unattainable without the support of our people. So in conclusion, zooming out again from the efforts of our people as individuals to our sustainability as a group and the sustainability of our industry, our language around sustainability has changed a lot in the last few years. What used to be seen as an environmental term is now a core concept describing our business's ability to survive, compete and thrive, and this is as it should be. Similarly, the way we talk about corporate culture and engagement has changed. These used to be nebulous concepts, rarely measured and not viewed as essential to profitability. Now most companies recognise there's nothing more crucial, and again, this is as it should be. But businesses should be and must take an interest in the communities we serve, as well as our stakeholders and customers. So when we successfully make this link between our culture and being a sustainable business, our own people actually become the disciples of our success. So thank you.